There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, and welcome back to the Grief Gang podcast with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. The message behind the Grief Gang is to normalise the topic of conversation that is grief. People living with grief can often feel ashamed, isolated, and alone. This podcast was created to break those taboos after I, myself, experienced all of those feelings after the loss of my mum in 2016. I decided enough was enough and we need to talk about this. You'll hear on this podcast an array of stories and experiences, some being my own and some being fantastic guest episodes and their incredible stories. You'll laugh, you'll cry, but I hope above all, I hope you'll learn. I hope you'll learn that you are not alone in your grief journey, that you have a voice and it should be heard, that you and your grief matter. So without further ado, I'll let you enjoy the episode. Happy listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Grief Gang podcast. It has been a hot minute, and this week's episode is a guest episode. And I'm so happy that this week's guest episode is someone who, during lockdown, I've come to know very well and likewise, and a beautiful friendship has blossomed from it. If you haven't already gauged who that is, you probably have seen her weekly through lockdown on our Instagram lives, chatting pure shits
every time.
But you all seem to love it. And I'm very grateful that we did those. And we were meant to record this back in April, the beginning of April. And then Rona happened. But we're here and we're doing it. So without further ado, I would like to introduce to you all Poppy Chancellor. Hi, everyone.
How are you feeling?
Thank you for having me, Amber.
No, honest to God, I'm so happy we're finally doing this.
It's been a long time in the making. We better make it good.
Literally, yeah. Because wasn't it? We were meant to record, I think it was like the 5th of April, out before one of your grief case meetups.
Yeah.
And then Rona. And then we were just like, oh yeah, should we just do a live? Like, yeah.
And you taught me how to do it. I said, what do it? So what, how does this work? And you're like, babe, you go on, you press the button. And I was really terrified. I think I was even like doing my lipstick during it because I thought it was so casual. And then I realized there were people there.
After a while.
And then we started to understand, okay, there's people, they're asking questions. Okay, right. Yeah, it's not
like,
just
got
us.
This. And we did. And we did that first live. And then the people wanted more.
They did.
The people wanted more.
I don't think they had a choice.
No, they didn't. We were like, we're here every Wednesday if you want to come along. And you can love us or hate us, but we're still going to be here. And we did it for a good, like, solid month and a bit.
Yeah.
And yeah, but again, I'm digressing. I've not even started. Guys, yeah, if you have tuned into mine and Poppy's live, you know the drill of how we roll and how it's a branch and a branch of a branch with us. And yeah, how we do. So
I'm going to, like, with this, like, wipe the slate clean as if that's a thing, because we know each other. Yeah.
Pretend you don't know
who I am. We literally
have
to pretend, yeah, like, you're a brand new guest. We didn't see each other weekly. And no one
else. We're not engaged.
Yeah, we're not engaged. Basically not a married couple. And wipe the slate clean, and we're going to tell your story.
Great. And,
because it's a bloody great story and what you have created with it, and we will eventually roll into that.
Yeah.
So, Poppy, without further ado, could you please tell the listeners who you are, your age, what you do for a living, and what you do in the grief community, and we will go on deeper depths to that later on.
Yeah. Well, my name's Poppy Amber. I am 33. I lost my dad 4 years ago to liver, lung and bowel cancer. And I would say I was a late bloomer in grief because I didn't feel my feelings for a long time. So this, I think, not that I have an extremist personality, but I definitely went from feeling nothing for 3 years to kicking the door down and demanding that we talk about this. And it was definitely like a 180 from, and everyone's kind of like, where did this come from? I thought she was fine. You know, when people say, I thought you were fine, I was probably the most allowed that you were going to say that, because I genuinely never spoke about it. I thought, you know, it was a good experience. He was, you know, I can't imagine it being any better than that. And I'm going to continue with my life. And I do think when I speak to other people who have trouble connecting with their grief, that there is a level of protection there that might come from, you're not ready yet, hun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you ain't ready.
You ain't and I don't think I was. And I maybe just needed a bit of strength to just come to terms with the reality of that. And I so wanted to be fine. And you know, I'm from an acting background. And I think I kind of faked it to make it until I couldn't make it anymore. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, when I speak to people who say, I haven't spoken about my grief in 10 years, I'm like, that's just because your bit that I had is just a little bit longer.
Just a bit longer, yeah.
And it doesn't shock me anymore. I think to other people, they're like, what, so you lose someone that close to you and you never speak about it? There might be a bit of even criticism from the general public of that. But then at the same time, the general public don't want to talk to you about your grief. So, we're kind of criticised whatever our grief
looks
like.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Yeah, absolutely.
And what's been amazing for me is I'm an illustrator in my job, and I one day just decided to talk about that I'd lost my dad, and my heart was racing before I posted it. I don't know if anyone who shares about their grief for the first time in a public space also has that feeling. I'm guessing they might do, because you're going,
but absolutely, yeah.
Also, like, I realise I'm the type of person that goes, oh, too much information.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people.
Yeah.
And I always thought when people were like, I've had a tough time with this, I'd be like, who cares? Why are you sharing about it on social media? I realised that I had a really critical voice about people oversharing, and that I was then getting that own critical voice of myself. But when I look deep at it, it's like, I have been in hiding as a grieving person, and I'm coming out.
I'm coming out.
And I realised that by pressing share, I couldn't hide anymore. I didn't really know that at the time, but I knew that my panic was probably related to, are people going to think I'm attention seeking? Are people going to think this and that and the other? And the response was wild. And I think from what I've seen, people discover the grief community little by little. So you may, in your explore page, something might come up, or you might search grief as a hashtag or something like that. And I literally got the full list in one go. So I think I had like 250 comments saying like, babe, you need to listen to this podcast. You need to, there's these meetups you can go. Yeah. And I was like, what? Also, yeah. I didn't know.
Exactly. Yeah.
I had no idea. I just thought, I'm going to tell my friends and family
I'm
grieving and I'm dealing with it and I'm going to talk about it.
I'm doing it, guys. I'm doing it.
Yeah. And then people, so the image that I shared was a paper cut that I made that said Dead Dad Club. And I was just going to, I was coming out basically as a member of the Dead Dad Club because I wanted to identify with it and I wanted to own it. And me and my sisters had said, we're all in this club together. And it made me feel safe and it made me feel like, hang on, I don't have to be ashamed. I can be in something that feels inclusive, especially with my sisters. Yeah. And I didn't realise that there were going to be all these, hi, member since 1980, whatever, member since 2000 and this, member for 3 months.
Yeah.
People were writing their story underneath. Mm. And I realised that by opening myself up, I gave people permission to say, this is my experience too. And I got goosebumps from it. And I was like, whoa, there's a whole world out there and I don't have to hide anymore. Yeah. I can discover different parts of it. Mm. I can, you know, oh, I'd love to talk to people about this. I'd love to see what their experiences are. And it was definitely my first taste of not feeling alone in grief.
Yeah.
And it came all at once, which was quite overwhelming.
Yeah, maybe you thought you'd have like a trickle, easy win, and then it was...
From what I've seen is like most people have that like trickle experience where they might find one Instagram, they might find another, and then that might encourage them to have a conversation with a friend or a family member. And I definitely felt like there was a door that I opened that kind of whooshed over me.
You got catapulted, thrown in the deep end. I got catapulted,
but I didn't realise that that was exactly what I needed.
Yeah.
And
maybe the trickling wouldn't have worked for you.
I don't think it would have because... there was something about other people's need to share themselves with me that realised it was okay for me to do that. Yeah. So I actually got a lot from even just those people writing the comment that they're members as well. They don't maybe realise that they helped me
as well
on a grief journey that was just beginning in that moment.
Yeah. I think you're both of us, we can speak from that, from... I don't think, we both realised how us sharing, or other people sharing their stories with us is so cathartic and healing for us too. Mm. And I think for people on the outside, so like some of my friends and family were quite hesitant when I started because they thought, is this going to do more damage to you by hearing...
Especially if you've been in a dark place.
Yeah, exactly.
People aren't sure if... are you making the right choices for you?
I think it is, you know, because mine was like manic depressive state, suicidal, start a page and podcast helping other people.
Mm.
My friends' family were like, hun, maybe you need to sort your own shit out first. And I was like, but I think this is that thing that's going to sort my shit out. And it fucking did.
Insane.
It's just mad. And for a while I battled with myself too, thinking, actually, is this the right thing? Is me meeting with people and hearing their stories and talking to people every day on Instagram, is that really gonna do something for me? And then when it started coming in, I was like, this is fucking euphoric to find people that just get it.
And I think connection as humans, we want to connect. Especially with people that empathise your experience or have experienced the same thing as you.
Definitely.
And as soon as you have all those little connections, you feel... So for me, I think being cut off or loneliness in my grief that was underneath... when I got to connect with those people and hear their stories and... and know that there was other people who didn't have dads and were worrying about what a wedding might look like, mm-hmm. or would worry about having kids and them not knowing a grandparent. Or I was like, whoa, I'd been secretly thinking all that mm-hmm. stuff and just not even letting myself go there mm-hmm. because of the fear of what looking those thoughts yeah. in the eye would feel like. Mm. And then when I realized other people were saying the thought out loud, mm-hmm. it kind of demystified all the, like...
Again, like we were just saying, yeah. you're doing it. It's okay yeah. to say these things out loud. Yeah. Like, if you're going to do it, then I'm going to do it too.
Yeah, and it made it much less terrifying. Yeah. And I thought people would attack me for writing same about things, it. Yeah. And I didn't realize how much compassion there is from other grieving people. I'm sure other people found it vulgar. I'm sure mm. other people maybe found it like a bit shocking that it just came up in their mm. feed and mm. like, oh, she's going on a rant. Or whatever. She goes, you know, again. We all have different
of course.
We all have different responses yeah. to things, but the overwhelming support that I got from that, I just, not that I hadn't got it elsewhere, but because it was on such a large scale, I was just, yeah, so overwhelmed and happy. And I learned a lot from all the podcasts that were suggested and all the pages that I should follow. And, oh, there's a meetup here. And I kind of started to dip my toe yeah. into a grief journey or like something that looked a bit like acknowledging that you've been through yeah. something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, some people call it a recovery, but for me, it's not something that I'm going to recover from.
Yeah.
But it's just moving in a direction that feels healing mm-hmm. and we don't fully heal, but it's just being soft and giving yourself a bit of time to acknowledge what you've been through, because it's very easy not to do that. And I think a lot of people don't do that.
Exactly. It's very comfortable. It's a comfortable, say comfortable, it looks comfortable on the outside, but on the inside it's strange, isn't it? You know, our stories are very similar, where we kind of coasted for like a good amount of time and then it all just came to the surface. And when I think back to that time where I was like coasting, I remember genuinely thinking like I was okay.
Yeah, oh God, genuinely. I was like, God, I'm doing so well.
I've got this grief thing in the bag.
This grief thing, I didn't realise it doesn't actually affect you in any way. And you can just carry on working really hard and everyone just admires you.
Literally.
What?
And then I was never in a frame of mind where I thought, this is going to catch up to me. I've never thought that. And then when it did, I was like, fucking hell, this yeah. is wild.
Yeah, I definitely got knocked for six and I was not expecting.
Grief was like, hello.
Yeah. Ah, I think you forgot about me.
It's been waiting in the bag like, are we ready to talk now?
Yeah.
Oh. I know, I kind of.
You know when you have an argument with someone, they're like, do you want to talk now? Yeah. It was almost like the death was the argument and I was still upset.
And grief was just sat in the chair in the corner like, so we're going to talk now.
Are you hungry?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you want dinner?
Do you want something to eat? Yeah, all right. Oh, amazing. Right. Could you tell me a little bit about what your life was like before you lost your dad? Just paint a picture for, like, what was your childhood like, growing up into adulthood? Paint a picture of you and your character.
Well, I was a really unruly child, almost, I mean, possessed in a way with naughtiness.
The best kind of kids.
I was definitely, my parents had no boundaries with me, and I now realise being someone who loves structure and being on time and all of these kind of little things, and I like preparation.
Yeah.
I realised I just craved a bit of structure.
Yeah.
And I know that my parents were rebelling against structure, and it probably is a cyclical thing that just goes round, and I'll have like a very rebellious child and then I'll have a very chill child, whatever. But I lived with my parents together till I was four. They broke up. My mum found it really hard to deal with his drinking and his lifestyle, even though she herself was also living a rock star life, yeah, or whatever, yeah. She, you know, bohemian vibes. And So I think for me, I had a dad, but he was like someone that I saw sometimes. Mm. I do remember living with him, but again, it was like this friendship more. Mm. And I never had like a very deep, intimate, like I never cried in his lap. Yeah. I never was like, Dad, I've just broken up with someone. Yeah. And he never went, don't worry, princess.
There it wasn't
like that, but it was, he was someone that really inspired me because he was a creative person. Mm. He was a performer. He was someone that just was punk, like his vibe inspired me.
Yeah.
And I very much would just kind of sit and listen to his stories. Mm. And he just obviously loved having an audience.
Yeah.
And would be like, when I was younger, yeah, wouldn't have guessed that. It's like this strong Scottish accent.
Just sat there in awe.
And I was like, wow. I can't believe I'm related to this cool dude.
Yeah, you're my dad.
But there was a level of intimacy, I guess. Like, I can count the amount of times he said he loved me. And that hurts me when I reflect back on it. Because I think with grief, you think, did I say I love them enough?
Of course, yeah.
Did I go round enough? Mm. So I think with a parent that wasn't 100% in your life,
in the
mud with you throughout everything, I feel like there are a few more question marks, and it's not just this straightforward, I lost my best friend. He wasn't my best friend. And my mum was my dominant parent who brought me up single after my dad left when I was four. So she was a single mum.
Yeah.
And, you know, having a relationship with someone who at the time was drinking a lot, for me was really hard. Mm-hmm. Like, as a teenager, introducing him to boyfriends and stuff, he'd be drunk.
Yeah.
And I remember just being embarrassed and also then really trying to protect him and all the things that go with being the child of an alcoholic, which there is a very much a routine. You grow up quick.
Yep.
You are responsible for everything. You try and protect them. They also have difficulty expressing love because there's something else going on, right? But then he drank less and he got married and had another family. So then there was also a bit of separation then because he was he was on another little journey, which I wasn't, again, in the bosom of.
Yeah.
But I'd never been. So
yeah, so it was kind of like, what's new?
It was kind of just like, I'm still going to go and see my dad every week and we're going to hang out and chat and stuff. So I guess that's how I related to him. And then there was the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, my grief really started at that point.
It's very interesting with that. So with people who have...
Because the shock started then. Like, that's when my heart could not go back to a normal...
rate. Normal pace.
Because the panic was...
Just from the jump.
Yeah.
So was Dad's diagnosis terminal from the go?
Yeah, it was 3 months. That he had to live.
Right, so it wasn't from... even...
No. Yeah. So my dad...
He's poorly.
Yeah.
We're going to go through this. He's ill.
It's like, there's no hope.
Yeah.
And so I remember being in my studio and he called me and I knew he'd been in hospital, but I thought, because he never always told me when he was, so apparently he had a stroke and he didn't tell me. And he was like, oh, you know, I had a stroke. And I'd be like, Dad,
that's not just something you say.
Dad, tell me. Yeah. But also he doesn't like, he's not a drama queen. He thinks you endure pain and that is life. Because he's got a very, he had a hard upbringing and he was a very strong person. So he wasn't like me, delicate flower, moan about everything. he was made of the strong stuff. So him having a stroke and falling down the stairs wasn't a big deal. And I was like, wow, okay. But it meant that my anxiety around him was very high because I couldn't, once I found out he'd had a few strokes, I think he had 3 strokes or something. And also he'd fall over and his front teeth came out. And just things that for someone who has built a life of trying to be on top of things as a result of these maniac parents, worrying about him was something that really affected me. So as soon as you get the phone call, that weirdly I'd been expecting my whole life.
Really?
Because he had a brain hemorrhage when I was 10.
Okay.
And I remember from that moment thinking, my dad's mortal.
Yeah.
When is he actually going to die? Because I thought he was going to die then.
Yeah. So there, from 10, it was sort of, I think, my dad's not going to be around for my
And also
whole
I
life.
Knew, because I saw on the cigarette packets, it said, kills. Smoking kills. Yeah. And then I'd be like, oh, well, he smokes a lot. Yeah. And then I knew that alcohol wasn't good for you because, you know, people would talk about this word alcoholic and I didn't know what really what that meant and what the impact was. So I think once he called me and said, like, I haven't got good news, I'm ill, and I've got 3 months to live. I remember being so cool on the phone and just being like, okay, yeah. And do you need my help with anything? And I kind of wish what came after my reaction after I hung up, the explosion, I actually cried on the floor of my studio. Yeah. I couldn't hold myself up. I kind of wish I'd done that on the phone now.
Yeah.
Because I wanted my dad to know that I really cared and I tried to be strong in that moment. And I did that for the rest of his illness.
Yeah.
And I didn't just let myself be like, Dad, I love you. Yeah. I'm just so scared. And there's something about I wouldn't let myself be vulnerable. And when I look back, I do think we would have been closer for it.
Do you think?
I don't know.
I imagine.
My mum always says, why didn't you show that side that you show me, which is the weak side, the imperfection.
I don't think that's the weak side. I think you did what you did on the phone for Dad.
Yeah, maybe.
For Dad. Mm. Not necessarily for, I think you did it for him, thinking, he's the one who's dying. Mm. If I buckle on the phone, what's that gonna do for him?
It just make, like, the pain once you realize, imagine making that phone call as well, like,
exactly. Yeah,
I guess I was trying to make it as easy
for him
as possible.
Exactly. I think that maybe unconsciously you were thinking, just for him, because to call your daughter and say, darling, I'm not gonna be here for much longer.
Yeah,
it's horrific.
Yeah, it gives me the creeps just thinking about it. But yeah, I think there was a toughness to me that I developed. And I think that also grieving people have, which is that you can be strong, get on with it. And it started at that moment.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Like you've got army exterior.
Yeah, and I just wish I would have just softened myself. Maybe not had to cry in front of him, but... Because I think that's where my denial of what was happening to me really started, was actually 2 years before he died. So he lived for two more years, amazingly. This is without any treatment. So he doesn't like being told what to do. And once they said, you're terminal, they said, we'll put you on the chemo.
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't think so. Why are you telling me what to do? It's my life.
Yeah.
And he didn't like the way that it was just presumed.
Yeah.
He said, if I'm not going to make it, why are you doing, what's the point?
Yeah.
And they were like, well, we just
offer it. Yeah.
And that's kind of just what we do. And he was like, fuck off. Fuck you. I'm getting out of here right now. And I was like, whoa.
You're like, oh shit, Dad.
Whoa. And even though he made choices in his life that were contrary, like he always tried to be different, I do actually think that choice meant that he had a better quality of life. And I think we often don't talk about quality of life in death because we're so desperate for someone to live.
Yeah.
That we will operate, we will do a lot of things that actually, if they're terminal, maybe let's just think about what dying looks like.
Yeah,
and is dying for you better at home, coming in a way that we can manage the pain and in a way where you're maybe not recovering from a surgery or you're not recovering from a lot of things,
drugs
that
put into you that drugs have side effects,
and like there's side effects of like your personality goes missing and your body changes, like my dad's body was going to change anyway, but it changed much less drastically than people that I've seen who've died from chemotherapy. Yeah. And that image often... I'm a very visual person.
No, absolutely.
And images stay with me. So when I've seen people, I think, that's not them. They didn't look like that. And I think, for me, even though, you know, he had an 8-year-old kid at this point and he had a wife at this point, and I think, I don't know what their thoughts were on it, but I understand that it could have felt like a kick in the teeth to not... try everything you could. But for me,
I was going to say, how did that make you feel when Dad said, no, I'm not going to?
I think also the bit I was annoyed about is my sister is a very healthy person.
Your eldest.
My older sister. Yeah. And she is like health guru vibes. Mm. So when she was like, okay, Dad, you're not going to do the treatment, but let's try eating differently. Let's try drinking differently. Yeah. Let's try... all of these different things. And that was just not going to happen.
No.
Not going to happen either. He wanted to die how he'd live.
On his terms.
On his terms. And actually, I've always thought, oh, Dad never taught me anything. Dad was this, Dad was that. No, Dad fucking taught me, do things your way until the end.
Oh. Oh my God, we go. I knew it'd be a crier. I knew it'd be.
How brave is that?
It really is. Because whenever we talk of your dad, and the only... I don't know what it is, but whenever we talk of your dad, the song that always comes to my mind, My Way, Frank Sinatra, and I don't know why, but it always does.
I did it my way.
Because he did. And I think there's something so heroic about that. To look death straight in the face.
And laugh.
And laugh at it.
And be like, not today. And go,
fuck your social norms. I'm not having chemo.
Yeah.
Fuck it. I want to live my life how I have for the whole of it. For this last amount of time.
Because it's what brings me joy.
It's what makes me happy.
Yeah.
If I'm going to die, I want to live the most happy time I have left.
And I don't think we realise what impact on your mental health... can do for if you are feeling happy and you are feeling surrounded by people that you love and your brain feels happy. Mm. I felt like he did want to keep going.
Yeah.
Because me personally, I don't like being in hospitals. Mm. I don't like the feeling of not having freedom. Yeah. I don't like being poked and prodded. Mm. I'm very precious. I think humans are precious about their bodies and you feel like they don't know what's wrong and that's why they're poking you and...
Ooh. Yeah, you're like a, little, like a lab rat.
But there was a lot of joy and pride that he had in those last 2 years. And every birthday was a party and every, you know, I've always wanted to do this. Let's go to the races or let's go to this or let's go to that. And stuff that I'd kind of thought I'd do with him but weirdly hadn't done up until that point. Was stuff that we, even though it was still painful because I knew why we were doing these things.
Yeah, bittersweet.
And I think, again, that was where my heart would kind of race slightly when it was his birthday. I'd just think, is this the last one? Is this the last one? But I was with him then. And it was a very kind of wonderful long goodbye that I got. And... I do think a lot of that was down to Dad choosing it. So, you know, thank you for that.
Yeah. What were those 2 years like? So, obviously you were told 3 months.
Yeah.
That's a fucking good stretch.
That was also, it was 3 months. They said you'll have 3 months without chemo and you might have 6 months potentially with it. And he just did the maths and just thought, well... And then he said, but what if I don't do it? And they were like, well, we actually can't tell you how long you will live for because we don't know. And I think he found that much more thrilling.
Yeah, in a way, Do you know, okay, almost like...
I don't want to be told how long I've got. Yeah. I'm going to show you how long.
I will show you and put that in your fucking books. There you go.
Yeah, write me down.
Yeah, and then the next person
who asks, a miracle.
Yeah, you can tell them. 2 years. Yeah, he can give them that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But in those 2 years, what was it?
What was it like every day for you, if you can recall? Like, was it like...
I think like I sleeping, was...
like
was
oh, it, yeah, all over the place.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, every night was it... And for me, it looked very different to after the death. Mm. So, like I said, I had these 3 years of nothing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because I had 2 years before then of the constant real, panic,
yeah.
of worry, of... Like, I remember the week after he told me he was going to die, I had an exhibition that week. Mm. And I remember thinking, Mum, I've got to cancel everything. Mm. I don't want Dad to have to come if he's in pain. I can't do it without him there. I really want him to come. Mm. And Dad was like, are you joking? Of course do your exhibition. I will be there. Just get me a chair.
Yeah.
So I can sit down. Mm. And like, oh my God, he was in the middle of the room on like a throne, basically. I mean, it wasn't a throne, but he embodied it as if it was. He had like a little walking stick and he got to see all my family that he maybe hadn't seen. Like my granddad was there, RIP, and my aunts were there and my little sister was there. And it was just like, I could kind of see how he wanted these last bits to be. Like, he wanted to be involved.
Of course, yeah.
And he wanted to witness as much as he could before mm-hmm. he went. But yeah, I would say in the 2 years dealing with the diagnosis, I was panicked. Mm. I was anxious, already an anxious person anyway. So it was just like an excuse to turn the anxiety up a little bit higher. A lot of worry, a lot of hope, a lot of talking to people about it. But it was hard because I almost felt it was harder talking about someone who's terminal than talking about someone who's dead. So people couldn't be like, you know, I know your dad died and I know that must be awful. It was like, so your dad's not well.
Yeah. Oh. Don't know when he's going to go. But we know he's going to.
Still around.
Yeah.
So I think there's almost less language around a terminally ill person than there is around grief. Because I, obviously now that we've spoken and we're part of learning a grief language, I actually felt people were more awkward with me then. Because there's something coming your way.
Something very imminent.
There's an impending doom.
Yeah, yeah.
And it felt like it.
Yeah.
And we just didn't know when it was going
to
be.
And there's no way for people to try and sugarcoat it.
You can't fix that one.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't give it, like, suppose after you die, people give it the whole time's a healer or shit like that.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
With an impending death, it's, what do you say?
Yeah.
You can't sugarcoat, you can't drop a little dose of something.
And if you do, like, maybe he will get better.
I found
that unhelpful.
That's quite unhealthy, I think, when...
And you're like, maybe it's like, no, they've said there is no...
The doctors
the way that it is moving through his body, he won't be able to function.
So don't try and plant a fairy tale in my head, like, as much as it is my
You and I
dream.
Are not into the fairy tale.
No,
like,
we're not.
Real experience is not any way like a fairy tale. We would love it to be. It just isn't.
It's not.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this 2020 is not.
2020 is taking the piss out of everyone.
Is a fucking bitch.
Yeah.
So, we sort of dipped into... Well, you've wrote down your story there. Would you mind going into when you found out Dad died?
Oh God,
and
yeah.
Where you were?
Of course,
you can remember.
Oh God, I'm sure we all remember, don't we? It's like, you know when people say, "Where were you when?"
Yeah,
I feel like this is your own personal "Where were you when?"
Yeah.
Because you will never forget it unless you're really drunk or whatever. But
yeah,
this is like a moment that definitely stays with you. So, Dad had been admitted to hospital. Just getting to the point where he was not functioning anymore.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing him and being like, whoa, he's gone very yellow and he has become very skeletal. So I remember putting my hand on his back and feeling his spine.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no. And because I'm very practical, but I was thinking, this is it, this is it, this is it, this is it, running through my head. So I was trying to savor moments. I was trying to make things as comfortable as possible. I remember there's a race called the Grand National that my dad has been obsessed with his whole life. And he would put loads of tickets on and he'd give you your ticket when you came around to his house. So you didn't know what, I didn't know what horse it was, but we would all do a big thing and he never won, and always like some random person always won, and he was always really pissed off about it. Yeah, he never won.
Oh, bless him, but he did it for everyone.
Yeah, he wanted to get everyone interested. I was always just terrified. Like, I couldn't watch. If one fell over, I'd start crying. Like,
yeah, it
was intense for me, right? Yeah. But he wanted to listen to the Grand National in hospital, but he's in a room with like maybe six other people at this point. And he's like, come on, get the Wi-Fi, get it on. I want to know, you know, what about this person? So I realized with people who look after ill or dying people, if you're caring in some way, again, my anxiety, like I was stressing out trying to get the Wi-Fi. I was trying to get an iPad that I could play this on. And even though that was meant to be a nice moment, I was definitely stressed because I wanted him to, if this is going to be the last thing,
he needs it now.
So then I'm like demonic in my own little way trying, what's the Wi-Fi? You know,
give me the password.
What's the code? You know, just in your, like my madness. No, it's just...
What's the Wi-Fi?
You'd be scared if you're working there. Capital A, lowercase C, and I'm like, lowercase what?
Yeah, I bet the fucking hospital nurse, they were like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. So you got the Wi-Fi.
So we managed to get that.
You got the Wi-Fi.
So it was me, his wife, and all his daughters. So three of us with him there listening to the Grand National, which, you know, now as a memory, I'm like, God, we smashed it. Got the Wi-Fi.
Yeah. We did that.
We did that.
Got the Wi-Fi.
And then I think he spent about a week in hospital and I was visiting every day. At this point, I was in the middle of getting a book done and they were calling me and being like, excuse me, can you sign off on the front cover? And I just thought, no.
Fuck you. No.
And they were like, well, if we're going to get it out in time for Christmas, it has to go to print. So there was a weird conversation that I was having in the hallway with my publisher and with my management about getting my book done, which weirdly I could do. It was a time when I could switch off.
Yeah.
And also it was something that I knew what I was talking about. So I could go and have these conversations, be like, I don't like that cover, but I think this one could work. Yeah. And there was a moment where I felt normal and I felt professional and I felt like I could cope.
Yeah.
And my life was going to be okay.
Yeah, if I can do this now.
Even though when I hung up, I was still in the Whittington,
of course,
like waiting on a floor that was for people that they were very concerned about. Eventually he got moved to his own room and I don't quite know how he managed it, but it was something to do with, he made up some stuff about, oh, I need my own loo and so basically he winged it. He was just trying to get plus one on the guest list of life again because that is his skill.
Gift of the gab.
He needed his own room. He was just on a morphine drip that he was really enjoying. They kept being like, you should probably be unconscious at this point with the amount of morphine. He's like, I can
crank
do it.
Up.
Yeah, crank it up. And they're like, okay. Again, he's like hard as nails, this guy.
They're thinking, who is this guy?
Yeah, who is this? Crazy. So I think because I was very aware that this was it, on the last day that he was alive, my sister and I were just playing in music in the hospital room, again, in our own private room, which was lovely. And he was just singing along and he was like, oh, I love that one. But again, I'm a bit stressing out about the Wi-Fi and like, is there a YouTube ad?
Like,
do you have Spotify? Who has Spotify?
No ads, please.
No ads. And he'd kind of go in and out of being asleep and being awake. And I remember crying so much and not knowing whether he was still breathing that I was too nervous to go to the loo in case he died, even though the loo is
just there,
like next to the bedroom. Yeah. And so I needed a tissue because my nose was running, but I would just get the sheets and just like blow my nose into the sheet.
All
and,
eyes
like,
on him as well at the same time.
All my tears. Yeah. And then I put it back down and be like, okay, so I can...
I'm still here.
Yeah. So there was a lot of... I just was almost desperate to not leave. I was desperate to be there. I was desperate to have some kind of connection. And he literally starts going, come on, come on, I'm ready.
Oh.
And like, even though it was really hard to hear someone say that, because I didn't want him to go. Yeah. And I remember my sister saying, Dad, your body's just a big old coat and it doesn't fit you anymore and it's wet and it's heavy and you can just take it off. Mm. And he was like, yeah. Because I could tell he was uncomfortable in his body. And it wasn't how it was meant to be for him anymore. And I thought, God, that's quite a bold thing to say.
Yeah, but you're like, damn, sissy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. But it just made sense to him. And I think he calmed down a bit then. Something about hearing someone say, I'm ready, I think a lot of my anxiety left. Mm. And I thought, actually, I don't have to be here all night long.
Yeah.
I can go and get some rest for myself. He's okay.
Yeah.
And I think we left at about midnight and he died at 3 a.m.
Okay.
And also there's so much stuff about my dad where if you're there, he wants to talk to you. Mm. And he wouldn't let any of us help him go to the loo. Mm. He was quite private.
Prideful man, yeah.
Very private. And he didn't like the idea that he needed help going to the loo. Mm. That was something that really annoyed him. And he wanted to be able to do that. That was his pride that he could do that. So, okay, I'll let you do that. And then I thought there was something that he needed to be alone.
Alone, yeah.
Because otherwise he was drawing it out for us, to be alive for us. And I just knew, actually, we left and he would have had some moment to himself.
To get out
and maybe he would have just been like, I don't have to be on anymore. Mm. I don't have to perform anymore. Yeah. And I really, it may not have been like that, but in my mind and my heart, I think that he got to have a chance to just, again, on his own terms, on his own, he got to just
go. Take the old coat off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I know. So I got a call from his wife basically at probably about 7 a.m. the next day. And as soon as I heard the phone go, I thought he's gone.
He's gone, yeah.
I never get phone calls early. They know that I sleep late.
Yeah, yeah.
They know I'm a little piglet and I don't get out of bed till 9:30. And she was in bits. Mm. And again, I was like, okay, is there... You know, should we come and see you today? Should we go for a walk on the heath? Should we? I think she said, would you like to see his body? And I said, no, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm okay. Mm. And I think now that I know more about the death process and also funerals and I know a bit more about it, I didn't realise that you could... It was the idea of him on the metal table that gave me...
The heebie-jeebies.
The creeps.
Yeah.
Because I knew he wouldn't, he'd have a sheet over it. I watched too much CSI and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I know that you can ask to view them in a more comfortable way. So they can be wrapped in fabric. Mm. They can be clothed.
In their clothes, yeah, like in the Chapel of West and stuff like that. Yeah.
So I didn't realise. And I think now looking back, I would have liked to see his body and just maybe say a few things. Like, you're at rest now and I love you very much and... You know, just a bit of goodbye that was physically to him, I think I would have liked on reflection. But, you know, now I know more about it, I'm really glad that there are questions you can request of your undertaker and the funeral director and say, I'd like you to prepare them for me to see them.
Yeah.
And I want them to look comfortable and I want them to
be peaceful,
have a few things with them. Yeah. And I would, you know, whatever that is. I might just shut the curtain a bit.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah, you were struggling a bit in the blind.
I'm blind.
A wee bit blind.
A wee bit blind. A wee bit blind.
What part of Scotland was he from?
He's from just outside Edinburgh.
Okay.
A fishing town called Musselburgh.
Okay.
And yeah, he had, I think there were six of them.
Six siblings.
Yeah. Oh my god. I think he was one of. Maybe he was number seven.
Oh no way!
So there were loads of them.
Yeah.
And yeah, Granny Dot passed away last year.
Oh, okay.
So his mum, but she had dementia. So when people were trying to explain to her that Dad was dying, she was like, she maybe thought it was her husband or who had died when my dad was 12. So yeah, I think there was something nice about knowing that his mum was still around, and even though she wasn't in the best way, someone who'd known Dad.
It's a link, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a link. And then when those links sort of start going after such a big loss, like for me, there's losses that I think about and I think, God, that'll be awful in itself. Yeah. And I think, but then even more awful because that's...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Another link to mum. That's another person who have stories of mum and stuff like that. So it's almost like a double whammy. I was going to ask, before I go into the next question, can you talk a bit about your dad's funeral? Because I know
hun.
Yeah, let's get into this.
I think I didn't realise that I could... do whatever the fuck I wanted.
Yeah.
And because I was following in Dad's lead, this was not going to be your regular funeral. And I'd been to funerals with Dad that he had just looked at me and been like...
Don't do that to me.
My half-sister, who's my older sister, had lost her mum 4 years before Dad died. And Dad came to her funeral and he went, I want it just like that. So my sister had created this wonderful thing where we had a cardboard coffin and people would come and write their notes in Sharpie all over the coffin, and then it suddenly it's covered.
Yeah.
And you get, you know, someone might have something they wanted to say or just even send their love in a way that felt very unconventional or felt a bit naughty, like writing on a coffin.
Yeah, cheeky.
And he said, I don't want any fuss. I want cardboard coffin. I like that. Not too expensive. I was
cheap,
like, okay. But because me and my sister are very creative souls, we were like, okay, we're going to put the Scottish flag, but the lion rampant flag, which is a different Scottish flag. Okay. I don't know if it's more traditional. I don't know anything. I need to learn. But... there's a flag called the Lion Rampant, which is a red lion on a yellow background. And my dad had one, and it's like old flag. I don't know where he got it. Portobello Road. He loved secondhand shops. And we put his scarf, his tartan scarf, and the flag over. We put like flowers all over the coffin with thistles and everything. You know, his identity as a Scottish man in London was very much part of him, and I knew his family were going to come down and his friends and everything. And he, you know, his name was Jock the Scot. Yeah, that was what people knew him as.
You could not,
I'm not, you know, I'm going to make it as Scottish as possible.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
And we had little pieces of tartan that my sister cut to size so that you could make a ribbon. And we had all these pin badges. So as soon as somebody turned up, we'd make them a little tartan ribbon, and the dress code was tartan.
Amazing. Amazing.
And his friend, who's a Scottish actor, led the memorial. We had readings from all different people, and then big double-decker buses with his name on and a tartan ribbon at the front. And apparently people were like, oh my God, is that Jock's funeral? Like, because we drove through London with these two buses to the wake.
That's insane.
And like his friends were like getting on and off the bus. Like, I just got to go and see someone. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. See you later.
TFL.
Yeah. See you later. And then we went to the Bethnal Green Working Men's Club, which is somewhere that I'd been with Dad. We'd been to see gigs there together. Mm. And it's a very... It's so my dad. Mm. It's a pub, right? Yeah. So it's got like the dirty, tacky carpet that smells sticky, of like crap. But it's also got a huge love heart in lights. Amazing. So my friends, bless them. I was having a bit of a breakdown about how am I going to dress the space, but also attend the funeral. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my friends said, babe, we don't need to come to the funeral. We'll dress the space mm-hmm. while you're there. So when you come back, it's exactly as you want it. And those are people I would have liked to have had with me there. But they gave me that support.
Yeah.
And I've always said to them, if you ever need me, I will be there.
Yeah, for what you've done for me.
That for me is probably one of the biggest things that I'm grateful for in my life is that they hung up tartan bunting, they put flowers everywhere, they had baked cakes, and so when they walked in, my dad had a lot of friends that he was difficult, right? And he was tight, and he was, you know, he wouldn't buy you a drink and all that stuff. So people had thoughts about my dad that maybe weren't always good because he was difficult, and I get that. But when they walked in that room, I managed to transform what they thought about him. Because this is who Dad was.
Yeah.
He was a celebration. Yeah. He was a talent. He was, you know, the bar is free. Mm. Like, my dad has made you buy drinks for him his whole life. Yeah. But today,
it's on us.
Yeah. It's on us.
Yeah. It's on Jock. Don't worry.
Exactly. So there was, I felt like there was a lot of healing that I got to give to Dad by paying him that much respect.
Yeah.
And people, we read his poems all night long, so there was a microphone at the front. And the accents, the people that, you know, you had
I love this one of my favorite of Jock's poems. It goes a little bit like this.
You know, my uncle. And then
my uncle.
And then you've got people going, oh, and this is one of my favorites. And then you've got just people from everywhere.
Different walks of life, everywhere.
Related to his words, which were very, you know, they were about depression and they were about the feelings he had to his family. And he really opened up through his writing. He didn't open up in life and that's fine, but he had his outlet, which people really connected to. And I suddenly thought, God, he's really good.
My dad's pretty good.
He's really good. And people kind of, you know, thought, oh, he's all right. And but there was something to do with, in that moment, the respect that people showed him. And I thought, this is how people are going to remember Dad. And, you know, whatever thoughts, like I said, people had, they maybe didn't know his kids loved him that much to do. They, you know, I know he had a daughter, but I maybe didn't meet her. And I'm like, no, that's me.
Yeah, honey, that's me.
That's me. And I love him and this much. And I got the flowers from the place I wanted. Like, we had God Bless Jock written in flowers across the front of the stage. We had balloons. And this is all money that I'd raised through people that he knew, through bands that he had supported, through... you know, he didn't have any money to get the send off that he wanted. And I said, no,
I'm going to do it.
Guys, you know, he does. He's a legend, but he's a broke legend.
Yeah,
but,
I ain't got money, you know, but he's a legend. He deserves it.
So I feel like for me, the funeral healed me.
Yeah.
And it healed his family and it healed people who didn't think much of him.
Mm.
And his family maybe thought, oh God, he went to London and tried to be a poet and, you know, had kids with three different women or whatever, you know. And it's like, no, we're all, it's love only.
Yeah.
And for me, that is something I just remember so, so fondly. Mm. And I think I left, loads of people stayed, there was music. And I was like, I'm exhausted, I'm traumatized, I need to go and have some self-care, but you guys carry on.
Carry the party, it's fine.
And I think it went on till late and I just thought, he's here with us. Like, this would be his perfect thing.
Absolutely.
And yeah, it was magic.
Sounds like a movie.
It was great.
Literally like a movie.
And I also didn't realise, if you don't have that control over a funeral or if you're arguing with your family, and I realised that that is something that stays with you. Okay. Like, people might not think funerals are that important because it seems quite formal or it seems quite this or quite that, but it is your expression of love.
It's a massive part of the journey.
And if there is family difficulties where it's like, no, it's going to be my expression and not your expression. I realised how important it was for everyone to have that time on the microphone or, you know, we asked, would you like to read something or would you like to carry his coffin? There was just, it was very open as to who felt comfortable doing what. So he used to date Nena Cherry, gorgeous. Yeah, and she, I asked, would you like to carry the coffin or would you like to read something? And she was like, actually, I think, like, people had their boundaries. Like, that doesn't work. So then someone else could do it. And there's something, when you invite your community to remember someone.
And get involved.
It just felt very organic and great. And there's been times where I have seen things that aren't like that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And I've been to them and I felt awkward. Like, and I've been like, maybe it would have been better if you, you know, I've criticised them in my mind because I'm a human. But I think for the living, we need to remind people, if you have wishes for your funeral, get them down.
Absolutely.
If you want to tell your family what song... I might not know actually what my mum's favourite song is because she's got loads of favourite songs. But so I feel like that we have a duty to help whoever's left behind not argue with each other. Yeah. I want this, this and this. I want that coffin.
Yeah.
I'd like to... if you want to bury me, fine. Cremated, don't mind either.
Yeah, yeah.
So then there's less unsaid. And I think because death is not spoken about and, you know, even grief is starting to become more spoken about, but... Yeah, I'm getting really into, like, death plans.
Absolutely.
And because we're in this community, people talk about that kind of stuff. And I'm like, exactly. There would be less arguments. Oh my people God, would get to create something wonderful.
It takes that burden off the family.
Yeah, because
as well.
You don't always know what kind of coffin would they like.
Exactly. Like, with my mum, the only thing I knew was the songs that she wanted.
Yeah.
And she wanted to be buried in Norfolk, where she was from.
Yeah.
But that's all I knew in terms of... what kind of wake she wanted. We were kind of a bit like, oh, don't really know. But for me, I know for my future kids or whatever, if I'm blessed with them, I'll be like, hon, you've got from like from the morning till the evening.
Plan. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I've done it for you. Yeah. Don't worry. Like, 9 a.m. you'll get up, you'll do this.
Yeah, yeah. Make sure you eat before the funeral.
Yeah, yeah. Have this for breakfast. Yeah. It's a hearty meal.
Yeah. So I feel like the more we can have conversations and not feel that a funeral has to be a certain thing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you might want it to be a certain thing. You might want it very traditional. Yeah. You might want, but it can. It, as long as you have the freedom to create whatever you want, and I do think that sometimes comes from conversation. Mm-hmm. And because my dad was dying, he said I wanted it just like this.
Yeah.
And even though we added a few
a little tweak
flourishes, I did really feel that. I didn't realise a funeral was healing for the people that were attending. I just presumed it was like a bit of a goodbye. But for me, it like tied my relationship with my dad in this tartan bow.
Yeah.
And it felt safe and loved there. And I've felt like that ever since.
That's amazing.
I know. Lucky. Yeah. Lucky.
Lucky.
Because some people, now that I've spoken to people, I know that is not, that is, you know, some people didn't go to the funeral. Some people didn't this. But again, I mustn't compare myself to other people's experience because I'm invalidating myself. Yes. But I know that other people haven't had that. And I'm really grateful that I got to have
it. Absolutely. It sounds absolutely beautiful when... You did dad just. There's something that you said in that I'll bring back later to when I want to talk about grief case, because as you said it, I was like, that's you. Literally, you said it, I went, that's just you. But my next question for you is, what's your outlook on life now? Do you think anything positive has come out of your grief?
Well, Amber, I've always thought that grief doesn't have to fix you. Grief, you don't have to become a better person because mm-hmm. you have suffered a loss. And I think that can be a pressure on people mm-hmm. to be like, but you will learn so much more. You will go so much deeper. You'll be a better person. Yeah. You'll be this. And it's like, I don't think I don't want to put pressure on anyone or myself to feel that grief has improved me, mm-hmm. but grief has definitely taught me things, mm-hmm. which maybe I didn't know before. Mm-hmm. So maybe that is an improvement, whatever. there's something that I feel about toxic positivity and grief, and that we don't have to be anything. Mm-hmm. We don't have to learn from it. We can just be sad.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
But I think what I've got from it is that I'm not alone, mm-hmm. and that's what I've got from the grief community. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
I can be a very critical person instinctively because, you know, many different things. And I think I've let myself mellow
mm-hmm.
because compassion in grief is something that just bubbled into me. Mm. When I realized that I wasn't alone and that other people were dealing with their own grief, whatever that looked like, and their own losses, it so comforted me that I wasn't an alien. Mm-hmm. I wasn't feeling all these weird things that I couldn't understand on my own. Everyone was feeling weird, strange feelings.
You feel that too?
That felt wrong or felt
shameful.
And like I've spoken to you, I felt a lot of relief after my dad died because he wasn't suffering anymore. And I felt ashamed of that. Mm. And then suddenly lots of other people who had expected loss, there was this feeling of like, they're not in pain anymore. Mm. And that for me was like the most taboo thought that I'd ever heard. And I would never tell anyone that. Mm. And then when I realized, oh my God, other people have that they're happy that they're not in pain anymore. Mm. Obviously, I'm not happy that they're not here, but it was just things that I felt were like thoughts that I just pushed so far down.
You cannot say out loud.
So now I'm just saying like mad stuff all the time, like maybe this, maybe that. And I've become, I think I've found my voice in my grief, and I'm grateful for that. And just to be part of something where I can put myself in the back seat a bit, because I'm very much attention seeker. I'm a drama queen. I want it all to be about me. So I think from my grief and finding the grief community, I've been able to just be like, wow, I'm just a human and other people are dealing with it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's been really good for my ego. Because at the beginning, I thought it was like the Poppy show.
Yeah.
You know, I've lost my dad. I've lost my dad. And I kind of wanted it to be like, I wanted everyone to.
And I think everyone has been through that in a sense of, my XYZ has died. This is about me. I can do whatever the fuck I want with that. I can be wild with it.
Yeah.
I can talk to whoever how I like this for me anyway.
There's definitely two sides of like, definitely. I wanted people I'm longing to for know.
Community.
Yeah, I'm longing for community, but I also...
But also, fuck the lot of you.
Yeah, yeah, like, fuck everyone. Yeah. So I think just being able to take a seat back and sit with my grief and create a space for other people to sit with their grief, it feels like a much more mature place. Mm. And because I'm naturally, you know, permanent teenager, permanent child, just in how I am. I feel like I've matured in a way that I'm really pleased. And I think my dad would be really pleased that I can put myself a bit to one side and genuinely give my listening and my love to other people that lovely, timid first moments that you and I both know so well of someone saying, I've never spoken about this or, oh, I didn't know this existed. Yeah. And I'm like, come here.
Yeah. I'm here.
It's okay. We're all here together. Yeah. And we've all been through it. Take a seat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Join the club, hon. We're all here together for you.
And there's something quite, not parental, but I feel like I can take what my dad gave me, which was really love, unconditional love, I can give that to other people by giving people a space to share.
Yeah.
You know, being heard is such a huge part of love. Yeah. And you know that a relationship with someone where they listen to you feels intimate, it feels loving. So I feel like that's my way of honouring Dad as well, is like just taking the time to listen to other people, which I think, due to my character, I don't think I had that inbuilt before.
Yeah.
I was selfish.
Yeah, no,
I was a selfish arsehole.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm saying it.
Yeah, absolutely. When we're thrown into this world, I speak about it all the time, you gain this newfound empathy for people. Like, I cry all the time. I cry at everything. And it's not just like sad, happy tears. I just...
Adverts.
I just feel a lot more. Like, oh my God, what was I crying at yesterday? Little Fires Everywhere. Have you watched that?
Haven't seen it yet.
Fucking insane.
Apparently it's good.
So, so good. But it was just like a really intense scene. And I was just like, I just feel everything right now. My partner's just like, you're fucking weird.
You definitely sparkle with a different light that is much more nuanced. You kind of
read
than...
people more, don't you? Like...
I bet you and I are the same. Like, we go to a party and we'll find the person and it's like, babe, did you lose? I lost someone.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, let's have a chat.
You just because gravitate like a magnet.
I was bad at small talk anyway, but I'm worse at it now because I know the depths to people.
You know how far they can go.
I know. Don't ask me, oh, so what do you do? Yeah. There's more to you than that. And there's more to me than that.
Like, come on, let's get the bullshit.
That's the bit that's interesting about people. But we're kind of functioned and kind of conditioned to just stay on the surface of life.
To just give surface levels.
And I don't want to do that anymore.
No, neither. And I think what makes the grief community so... amazing.
We love you.
And honest to God, I'm indebted for the rest of my life. Is that we skip that small talk part. Like, me and you were talking, we were like, oh shit, we didn't even really know like what each other do.
Yeah. Like, I was like, what do you do? Because I know.
Literally know everything about each other.
I asked the stupid question. Because we'd already gone. We had to do the surface level after we'd done it was the other way around. We'd done the deep dive.
But that's how it goes. Yeah. We find out the really personal stuff first and foremost, and then it's the what'd you do, how many kids or siblings or whatever do you have,
which is the less important stuff,
which is in the ground
because I know who you are
exactly,
and whatever you did for a living wouldn't affect
how
deeply I knew you
and those feelings you have shared with
me. Imagine if we all did that.
I know this, and then this is why sometimes I do find it hard to meet people who
want that, they feel more comfortable at the other level.
And then there's times, or something to tell you after this actually as well, that it's sort of like this as well.
And it's, but it's like, private, guys.
It's private and you'll all know about it soon, don't worry.
And I was just like, it was sort of the annoying, it's this and that. And I was like, I'm not used to talking to people like this. I'm used to just being, people say it's oversharing, but it's not. Someone said it yesterday. It's not oversharing, it's undertalk, something like that, undertalking or something like that, I don't know. And I was like, yes, that's literally what it is. Miss me with that fucking small talk shit, it's not for me.
No.
That's why I love the grief community so well, is that it's not like, it's almost like having a boy, like talking to like a new boy or something, like, hey, what are you up to?
Yeah.
Just a nap. Really, you want to know like when you're going to get dick.
Like, yeah. You want to know.
You just want to know when your dick appointment
the
is.
The information.
Literally. Yeah. So it's like, skip the bullshit.
Wow, maybe that can be a... talking about grief is like getting the dick appointment.
It's like getting the dick appointment. Let's get straight to the point.
Yeah.
That's going to be a new cutout.
Let's get to the point. Oh my God.
But to bring round to what you said when you talked about your dad's funeral and then tying in with grief case, you said with your dad's poetry and how in his actual... personal life he didn't really express his emotion but like in his poetry he did. I from what I know of you, I feel like that's you with your art.
It is,
like,
isn't
to
it?
A fucking tea when is. You said that you were like, oh, and I was like, that's you, Poppy.
It's true.
You and your drawings and your cutouts and everything, I was like, you
are your dad's daughter.
Yeah. Like, I didn't have the voice in those 3 years after he died. I didn't have the voice yet. I didn't know the language, and that's something I've come to learn. But I had the images and I had the confidence that I knew how to make images that I loved and that I wanted to share. And I really feel whatever your creativity is, whatever your self-expression is, whether that's journaling, whether that's drawing, whether that's talking in a public, like sharing yourself, however feels safe for you and in a way that is creative in some way, I just think that's when I got to say how I felt. And I, like I said, I was nervous. I was scared to do it at first. And then suddenly I found a language, and I actually feel like the art came first and the words came after.
Yeah.
And that's why I try and encourage people. It doesn't matter if your drawing's good. It doesn't matter if the writing's good, but what can you do to release that part of you? Again, it doesn't have to be shared. It can be for you
to keep
a book for yourself. For me, there was a release in sharing it because I think I'd been very cut off. But that's when I get excited. And I think that's what the grief case is for me, is someone's written something. They're not a writer. They're not a poet. But they got something down on paper. And that grief can look delicious visually. It doesn't have to be a candle in a sunset all the time.
No.
It doesn't have to be muted and misty. It can be current. It can be bold. It can be exactly who we are. It doesn't have to be all of these, you know, notes that are heavy and sad.
Like kind of like in drawing, well, I'm no artist. But when you shared the other day, actually, I'll give her a little shout, actually, because I loved it. So simple. But
the black and white.
Say goodbye and cry. So if you want to check it out, guys, it's at say goodbye and cry. And the picture I'm looking at, it's just, like... How would you describe
Okay, so for everyone at home, it's an old-fashioned camera drawn in fine liner with very delicate details, a lot of dappling. And then underneath it says, take photos of the normal, boring moments. You'll miss those too. So found an illustrator that was writing and drawing about grief and got to share that on a big platform. And then everyone else got to find her and like... So that to me was someone was quietly drawing away in their own little space about their grief and, you know, get other people getting to connect with her and being like, oh, my God, I feel like that. Oh, my God. I didn't realize you could do little drawings.
Or like they're okay. They're not like uncool. Or, you know, they're not big and audacious and whatever. Like they still. Like I feel something when I look at that. And it's not like a big old. Banksy or, you know, whatever. It's really intricate. You know,
no, it can be
like
personal and it can be unpolished and it can be raw. And I think, so those of you who don't know about the grief case, it's a space where I share people's writing and I share images around grief. And I like to share the deep down, dirty realism. I don't find it inspirational, like, but I know that it is, if that makes sense. Because somebody's just saying, like, I find grief really hard. And then there's a full stop. And I'm not trying to make you feel better. I'm just trying to let you know other people feel the same. And that's where I got a lot of my comfort. It's like, I have really dark days. And so do other people. And then you might have a good day. And, you know, it was just to give people the listening that they deserve and that they might not have in their everyday life because they're coping and they might not feel comfortable. Surviving. And some people want to stay anonymous and absolutely. And some people are like, oh, please tag me. I'd love that. So, you know, I work out what's respectful for them. And there's stuff that I read and I just know that other people feel that way. Yeah. And I have the urge to be like,
share.
I would love to share that with people because I know there's comfort in that.
Absolutely.
So
there's always at least one person who is, that speaks to me. I get that. So no matter what you share, what you do, it always speaks to someone. Mm. That's what's like for me. I know anything that I do or whatever, I know for someone out there, this is hopefully going to help them.
Yeah.
And that's, I think both are get up and go. Absolutely. With grief, okay, so how did you get from, so you posted it.
Okay, so this is on my personal account.
Okay, so you posted it on your personal account.
Yeah, so on my illustration account, I posted Dead Dead Club. And I made a commitment in the caption that I was going to start a poetry club talking about death and loss, which has turned into what the grief case is today.
Yeah.
And it started as me meeting with friends and family that had lost people.
Mm-hmm.
And we would read a poem,
mm-hmm.
either that we'd written or that we'd found, that described our grief in a way that we could not express.
Right.
So people that, you know, especially for me, I found it hard to talk about, but I had found somebody's words that could say it for me.
Yeah.
So I kind of got all these people together and we met, and my friend said same time next month. And I was like, okay, okay, sure.
Yeah.
And if you go down on the Instagram, right to the bottom, it's just photographs of those poems.
Okay.
That we read.
Yeah.
And then a few things like when my dad was in the hospital, I drew him.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that this is a dying man. Mm. But I couldn't process what I was looking at. And I thought, if I draw it, I can take this in a way that is comfortable for me. It can be a bit of light, a bit of dark, a few lines there. And it gave me something to occupy me. Mm-hmm. And when I look at the picture, I still, like, it really affects me because that is exactly what he looked like. But I'm really proud that I captured something and also comforted myself in a way that seemed a bit unconventional. Like, why are you drawing a dead person or a person that is dying?
Yeah.
And it's like, because I want to do something with my hands and I don't want to just sit here, like, freaking out. And it calmed me down. So it started as that. And then I was like, maybe there are other poems out there. And then I started kind of finding other poems and quotes and stuff. Mm. And then once the meetup started to grow, people would bring their writing. Mm. And I was like, do you mind if I share that on the Instagram?
Because
I'm kind of trying to collect all these writings about grief and our experiences. They'd be like, yeah. And then people would come to share, hi, I'd love you to share this on your Instagram because I read something that actually you wrote.
Yeah.
These are not professional people, but they knew who the other person was.
Friends of friends of friends.
From, I followed you after that, they posted that thing, and your story is really similar to mine. Like, people who'd lost mothers during their pregnancy and felt inadequate as parents without their mother there, and they wanted to ask their mum. So I was like, oh, well, you two can
connect. Yeah,
you two connect. And suddenly they weren't alone in that anymore. And then as it's grown, it's something that people are just sending in submissions now. And it's been an amazing, the speed that it's grown, I just don't know how to control. It's like a beast unto itself now. And we're in the process of making it into a website so that I can keep all the submissions in one place. Because I would like it to be, I would like my DMs to be private if I ever let someone else do a takeover.
Yeah.
I want what people write to be private.
Of course,
I don't think you can do that anyway. Yeah. But there's logistics
of course.
I would like it to be as accessible and also something that doesn't impact on my mental health. Because you do get loads of messages from people that are just panicking and in so much pain, and I'm not a professional, and I want to create a safe space, but also for me.
Of course.
What I've learned from speaking to people about grief is they'll say, hi, I'd love to talk to you about grief, but I don't talk about this and I don't talk about this. And I was like, boundaries. Maybe I should put some of those in my life.
Some of those, I'd like those.
Yeah, and I was like, wow,
I'm realizing that now.
Boundaries. So that is part of self-care and part of... And yeah. I only learned that through mm-hmm. having discussions with people in mm-hmm. the grief community, because some of the stuff we talk about is traumatizing and is might bring up something that someone's just worked through. Yeah. So I've realized that I don't need to have my DMs all the time.
Yeah.
Something that panics me and then I obsessively try and help people. And it's like, I could turn this into something where... you know, my DMs are for something else or whatever. Yeah. But again, I think that's when you come full circle mm-hmm. is like, hang on, where do I sit in this? Yeah. And am I okay?
Yeah.
And in having this platform, am I still really looking after myself?
Yeah.
And I think you and I both,
yeah,
both understand that. Yeah. That you know, part of grieving is self-care
mm-hmm.
and boundaries.
Yeah.
Something that we're learning to implement.
And I feel like it will be, or I don't want to go as far as saying a struggle, but I feel like it will always be, yeah, like a bit of like an uphill battle mm. for us. And I think anybody who is working in the grief community, be it professionally or unprofessionally, because it's something we're so passionate about.
Mm.
And we so want to help people, it's hard to find that line of when to stop. Because in a way, you know that if I stop, what does this mean for someone who mm. essentially might depend on this mm. resource? Mm. Then it's, fuck, I can't take a break. Because if I do, this could be really bad for someone who is knee deep in grief right now, and what I post or what I do mm. and whatever is really helpful for them. But what I've began to sort of tell myself and try and implement is, I'm no good to anyone else if I'm no good to myself. Mm. And I think that's for anybody working in the grief space, is that you are number one.
In general.
In life. You are number one mm. and you're no good to anyone if you're no good to yourself. Mm. And that's not to say that, I think that can get quite misconstrued as mm. like, it's almost like, you know, well, you created this space. So, mm. you know, this is what comes with it. Absolutely, darling. I know that's what comes with it. But I like self-care.
Yeah.
I like looking after me.
And I would like to be able to maintain the space in a way that I envision it becoming.
Yeah, and I'd like to
And you have to be strong to do that.
Exactly, and I want to keep delivering and providing a space and a safe space for you and for me. But, honey, I've got to look after myself too.
Mm.
So that's, I think it would always be an uphill battle for us. Mm.
Especially because it's part of a wider conversation that we have about grief not being supported in schools and by the government in a way that
it's
the people on the ground that are doing the work. Look, it's like that in loads of different mm-hmm. areas, in healthcare and this and that.
Absolutely.
And I get it, but it does mean that there is a burden because there's such mm-hmm. a need for it.
Yeah.
And if we're not prepared to work it into our
government, into our education, schools, into everything,
into it being something that is funded
mm-hmm.
in a way, it's like everyone's going to die, but not everyone's going to have sex. Yeah. But you do sex education in school.
Exactly, yeah.
I sometimes think about that as an example. It's like, some people might not have sex. Yeah, it's really important, but we're all definitely going to experience loss and die.
Yeah, that's inevitable, yeah.
So if something was inevitable...
Why aren't we talking about it?
Why aren't we talking about it?
Very good.
Fascinating. We're so fascinating with our huge brains.
But it's so true, isn't it? Like, when I think about like how I started Grief Gang and whatever, it came from there being a lack of a space where I felt I was represented in, I felt heard, I felt seen, and took it into my own hands. No government's done fuck all. No, didn't know nothing about this in school. And yeah, as you say, it comes with most things that sometimes the community have to do it. Mm. Some community have to get down on their hands and knees and do the dirty work.
Mm.
And I'm happy to do the dirty work because what's come from it, like this community.
Because now you've got strong arms just being like, woo! My hands are so dirty.
But because of what's come from it and the community and the people I've met from it, I'm so glad I did reach that rock bottom and came back up and found this because, like I said, I'm forever indebted to this community. Mm. And the messages that I receive, people receive of what the community space has done for them, I think, wow. If only everyone
and it's growing.
And it's growing. That's the thing, it's growing by the day. Mm. Unfortunately, to current times as well.
Mm.
Even more so.
Yeah.
And even with that, I feel like the people who are creating spaces... Oh, we're on a tangent now, guys. So I knew it happened. I feel like the people who have lost people during COVID-19 and are creating spaces, resources, platforms, I feel like they're like a new breed of grievers.
Yeah.
But they're like the fucking tough shit grievers. Like, when me and you spoke about it, like... and people have reached out to us and what we would do is our journeys are now so different. Mm. Me and you, we both got to see our parents.
Yeah, have a funeral that a funeral. Was important for me.
We got to. We
imagine
got
if
to,
you didn't have that.
And these people don't have that. Mm. So I feel like the people who have newly bereaved in these last 4 to 5 months and that are now creating spaces and places to talk about that, they're the ones we need to be listening to. Mm. They're the ones... Mm. Because God knows what they've been through. Mm. God knows. Completely different journey. And I take my hat off to them who have created spaces so
soon. Yeah.
It's insane when they've, some sort of like a month ago, and they've created a space. And I'm like, I did not have the...
Maybe mental... we can shout them out or talk to, or do a post around absolutely. Those people that absolutely. You're talking about.
Because
you're so right.
I wouldn't have the mental maturity.
It's a different beast, I think, literally. In a way.
But I know they are so... And that's not to diminish them and say, you know, oh, you're so strong. But they're so powerful. Mm. And so I see them as, it's just like a new breed. Mm. Of people who...
Superhero.
Literally, yeah, that is what it is. I literally see them as superheroes.
It's evolved into something.
Yeah, like us old grievers, we're like, you're the fucking shit. Like, you're the bee's knees. But that's my tangent.
Tangent complete.
Tangent completed. All right, my last question for you. The big one. The big daddy. If you could tell your past self one bit of truthful and honest advice for this grief journey that you're about to endure, what would it be?
Oh, God.
So if you could go back to Poppy in that moment, what would you say to her?
The thing is, I feel like I don't want to change her journey.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my first advice would be, however you are, and however this is going to look,
mm-hmm.
you'll get there in the end. It may not look like you're grieving.
Mm-hmm.
It may not look like you need to talk about it. But there's going to come a point where shit's going to hit the fan. And I think just trusting in that journey. I mean, I could say be more open or be more this or be more that. But I think... however our grief journey looks is perfect.
Yeah.
And I don't, like I said, I have to always challenge that critical voice in my head. And I can already hear myself criticizing my grief mm-hmm. journey and saying I should have started talking about it from the beginning. Yeah. But it's just realizing your body and your mind is going to guide you.
Mm-hmm.
wherever you're ready to go, and it may feel painful and it may feel like you're being taken in the wrong direction, but you know there's so much love in grief, and it's just knowing that you can fundamentally always tap back
into that
into the love mm-hmm. and that's what's gonna guide you and take you there. So when it feels like anger, when it feels like hate, when it feels like no one understands me, no one knows what this feels like, they don't.
Mm.
But look into the depth of who you are and just say, I trust you and it's going to be okay.
Mm. Oh my God, Paul.
She's crying.
I'm crying. She's crying. You see how it's on tap for me? Like, it's literally on tap for me. Like,
oh, Emma.
That was beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
That was beautiful.
I didn't know what I was going to say, but I think
that's
it's
what
true.
I love about that question. I love asking that question because it's just like a word from it of just. Yeah. I always envision it. When I ask myself that question, I just envision sitting in front of my 19-year-old self and being like,
fair.
Hey, hon. Yeah. Being like, things are pretty fucking shit.
She's like, who are you? Yeah. I'm your fairy grief mother. I'm going to tell you everything about the future. It will be okay.
Yeah, you will be fine. Well, that's it for my questions. Is there anything before we say our goodbyes that you would like to drop? Like a tag, a shout out, anything you'd like to drop? Drop your handle.
I think I'd just like to say thank you.
Oh, Amber. Don't. The pleasure is all mine. I'm so happy we finally done it.
For creating everything that you've done, for taking me under your wing.
You took me under your wing.
Okay, for us being under each other's wings. And just to everyone listening who is bold enough to be on this journey, to be open enough, you know, Amber and I know that you're here because you loved someone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we see that and we respect that. And, you know, like I said, that love, I don't know who you are, you don't know who I am, but I know that that love connects us for that person that we lost. And keep working towards your wellness, keep working towards your self-expression. There are loads of places out there. Find what speaks to you, listen to what speaks to you, and then when you feel the courage, share that person with the world. Share them with someone that you meet at party. You know, say, oh, my dad's dead, but I would love to talk a bit more about him. I know that might feel awkward for you, but my dad loved this song.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've really got to a point where talking about my dad flows in and out of my conversation in a way that doesn't freak people out, because I know that's how I want my life to be. I want my dad to be woven in, and I want to talk about wonderful memories and not suddenly feel that panic of like, oh no, they're going to be freaked out. Yeah. And the more that you and I have these conversations on platforms, the more I think people who haven't been bereaved are going to be receiving these conversations, and it will become more normal. Yeah. And, you know, that's our dream moving forward, is that conversation around death and dying and grief can become part of who we are, become part of education, become part of learning more about ourselves and being compassionate for other people, because human beings can get a bit lost on their way, especially with compassion, whether it's like we've been talking about the race conversation and with grief especially. There are ways that you can open your mind to humanity. And that's the journey that I really believe that we're on. And I want to just thank you and everyone listening for being part of that.
Amen. Amen. You're the one who needs a book. No, you actually, no, you've already got a book.
I've got a book.
You have such brave words. It's so great. Well, Poppy, thank you.
Thank you for being my guest.
I'm so glad we've finally done it. And as I said earlier, there's no one who I would be my first guest out of lockdown to be with. And just, I mean, you're probably going to be on the podcast again.
Like, oh my God, like invite me back. Invite me back. We can analyse different things.
Absolutely.
We're your agony aunt.
Yeah. And if not on a guest, you'll probably see us on a live sometime soon.
And because you're a technological whiz.
Oh, not
you,
me.
You might even like make a post that has like a bit of us talking. And like then
a
we can
snippet.
And we can tell people about it, and then they can listen to it.
The possibilities of this. Right, well, we're going to go and digress this and figure out how we can do this. But thank you all for listening. If you stayed this long for an hour and a half, but oopsie. You know, you want to stay for the whole hog because it's worth it and you've stayed. I don't know when this will be out, so I can't give you a date because I'm a messy bitch. So, but you're probably listening to it by the time you are now because it's out, but I'm just waffling now. So thank you. If you like what you heard, like, subscribe, share, all that bollocks and shit like that. And yeah, I have been your host, Amber Jeffrey, for The Grief Gang, joined by
Poppy Chancellor.
Hey.
Bye. Love you.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. I hope you all enjoyed it and it set your week off to a great start. Whether you've laughed a little, cried a little, I mean, I think crying is good for the soul, or you've resonated with something that was said, thank you for listening and spending time out of your day to do so. If you like what you hear, please do rate, review and subscribe. In doing so, you're ensuring that lots more people get to find the Grief Gang podcast and hopefully help them too. If you're not already, check out The Grief Gang on social media platforms such as Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. I'm most active on the Instagram page where I love, love, love to connect with you all. For now, take care and big, big love.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.